All right, we're moving on to the 15th chapter of John, believe it or not. It's been quite a while in chapter 14, but I didn't write this book, you know. I have to go with the flow. When the flow is heavy, then I have to be heavy. The 15th of John gives tremendous clues as to our connection with Christ, and that's, of course, what it's all about. What is the connection with Christ? It's not a matter of what religious capacities we can develop. Let's always keep that in mind. It's not your religious capacities, as we shall see in looking over this chapter. It's quite beyond us to touch base with God. How do you expect to do that? By being a great person or doing great things? And Galatians makes a pointed matter where he says, having begun in the Spirit, are you now made perfect in the flesh? Just think about that. Having begun in the Spirit, are you now made perfect in the flesh? The all common tendency is to use the Spirit as sort of a goad to get you on the way, see? Filled with His Spirit, so then you can get out and go to work. But that's not the Spirit of the Scripture at all. The Spirit of the Scripture is you just don't have anything to go on of your own. So you began in the Spirit. You couldn't even get up on the rung of the ladder. Remember how often I've said that you find what we call stepladder salvation, where you climb the steps of the ladder and you get on the top and you stand on your tippy toes and maybe you can reach God. You can't even get on the first rung, so forget it. You have to keep that in your mind, but it's hard to do when you're surrounded constantly by all of the suggestions and rules, regulations that will get you on top if you'll only work hard at it. Now here is a marvelous passage that shows the essence of how we relate to Christ. And it's probably one that's familiar to a good many of you. I am the true vine, and my Father is the husbandman. Now, I don't know how much clearer it can be than that. And incidentally, we've been talking about this matter of truth or reality. What we're dealing with Christ is reality per se. Remember, forever, truth is our articulation of reality, the way we perceive it, the way we speak of it. Reality is what Christ is. Christ is the real. Whatever that real may be, Christ is real, and we are merely trying to articulate that reality, trying to discuss it, not too successfully, I'm afraid. But we do try to discuss what reality is. Well, here he brings it up again. He says, I'm the true vine. I'm the real vine. He's using a lot of analogies here, as you find all through the New Testament, analogies or allegories as to what the truth of God is like. I've been speaking recently of what is something of an analogy, not to be taken as literal per se, but I've been talking about transmit a phenomenon, which is a quasi-specialized thing. In the internet, you have a span across the worlds, at least, for us, maybe the universe, of communication, where in an instant you're communicating clear across the worlds. If you think of that as far as Christ is concerned, and remember it's only an analogy, you think of Christ as interfacing the world. especially think of it at night. I like to lie there and talk to the Lord, and I think of myself as crossing the universe in an instant. You've got people you want to talk about, things you want to talk about, Christ. And in one instant of time, you're crossing the universe. Now that to me is an analogy that is worthwhile. If you'll keep that in your mind, it'll help immensely in your praying, where you're not just going over your shopping list. For a lot of people, prayer is sometimes a little drudgery, because you're thinking in terms of the shopping list. So many pounds of potatoes and rutabagas and 5 pounds of ground beef, etc. You're talking to the Lord about these things, but not stopping to recognize what an incredible experience it is for you to span the universe with Christ. So here he's saying, I am the true vine, and that means, from an allegorical point of view, he is the essence of life. What life is there out there? We've tried to surround our little property here with all kinds of foliage, with green and growing things. And you look at Christ, and he is the true growing thing, you see, the true life. I'm going to talk to you about the sprig of green. You have somebody you're praying for, somebody you're concerned about, members of the family, friends. You're looking for points of life, signs of life around them. What are you getting from them? What vibes that indicate that there is life there? And I often think in terms of a sprig of green. So, for example, I get a letter, not infrequently, I'll get a letter from someone that I'm concerned about and praying for, and it'll say, I'm praying for you. Now that is a marvelous sprig of green. If they have a heart to pray for you, there's something there. Or a comment will come out. Maybe your young people, you're troubled about them, maybe they're not functioning as you would like them to function, and then some statement comes out that says to you that they are, after all, concerned about Christ, but they don't show it much, see? But then a statement will come out and say, well, sometimes the Lord does this or that, and what a beautiful thing it is. It's the sprig of green. The real green in the universe is Christ, of course. And so he says, I am the true vine, the true growing thing. But now, who is the husbandman? My Father is the husbandman, the vine dresser. That should give us also a clue. Who is dressing the vineyard? Who's looking after the plants? Someone has to be looking after the plants. If you've done much planting of things, you know that if you don't look after the plants, things go downhill. We try to plant things that'll keep going even if you don't, but that's not always easy. Someone on the place to keep it dressed up and to do what is needed in handling the plants. Have a little soil amendment, there are a few things that you put in as you go along, but remember who the vine dresser is. It's God. And he is doing things in your life. You hear me well. Hear it out and don't forget it. But he is doing things in your life that you don't understand at all. And you're chafing at the bit. And you may even be saying, Lord, why don't you leave me alone? But things are going a little awry, and you're disturbed, distressed. You think the Lord has certainly left you to the weeds and the aphids, but he hasn't left you to that. You may have a few weeds growing up, but You're part of his garden. He's the vine dresser. It's his energy that does it. I remember a story, an allegory from the monastery. I don't remember which one. Two monks that had planted their garden. One of them went out every day and looked at his garden and asked God to give what he thought the plant would need. So he would go out and he would say, "All right, Lord, we need some more sunshine now. We're not getting enough sun, so give me some sunshine." The other monk went out and he would just stand there and say, "All right, Lord, give what it needs most." I want you to keep that in mind when you're praying for people. You pray for them, but the Lord will do in their lives what he thinks they need, not what you think they need. You're inclined to say, "Well, Lord, these people need this, they need that, they need money, they need health, they need to be able to get out and get their work done, etc., which is something I like to pray about." Don't pray that way. Pray that the Lord will do with them what he wants to do. And you'll always be on the safe side. "I don't know what this guy needs, Lord. Seems to be a little foolish to me, but he needs something, so you better help him. Or I think this guy is smart, and you just need to give him a little push and he'll be all right." No, you just pray the Lord will do what he wants with him. You don't know even what you need. You think you need one thing and you need something else. And some people might say, "Lord, I need to get out and get going for you. I need to find something to do to be more pleasing to you. So show me what to do." Well, forget it. When he's ready to do with you what he wants to do with you, he'll do it. You know, you try to think, you think you need some work to keep you busy. Well, he can cover your feet with work. But what you need is simply that whatever your life is, he'll see to it that it's what it should be, you know. Plants have a growing habit. I've told you before, I'm not great for gumdrop gardening, where you just take your clippers and zing, zing, zing. I don't know if we've got an example of it out here now. We had to have it done commercially this time. It didn't get the loving touch of its chief gardener. But when they take a beautiful tree and box it in, they make a box or a gumdrop out of it or a ball or whatever, they spoil it completely because it's got a growing habit. But not so with Christ. He has the time to put your life in the form that he wants it. And you don't think so. And one of the reasons you don't think so is because you listen to the media. "We've got to have this money immediately because we have an open door here, and if we don't get this in within the next 24 hours, we're going to lose the whole ball game," etc., etc., etc. And so, and of course, you've got the missionary appeals. There are many slogans. I'll give you one of the slogans because I don't think anybody here but one will remember it. "Untold millions still untold." That's a nice slogan. Pepsi-Cola would love it if they could get a hold of it. It's one of those things that goads a person out to rush out and get busy for Jesus, you know. How many there are out there? I've seen them go by the thousands, I'm sure I have to say, because of all the years of involving in school activity and so forth, that can't wait to get out there because people are dying every day. Well, yeah, they're dying every day. I don't know how to say it graciously, but I'm going to have to say it anyway. It's God's world. If he didn't want that many people out there, he shouldn't have made them all. Remember this, God has the time to cultivate your life the way He wants it to be. And you get antsy about it and think, well, what am I doing for the Lord, and why aren't things moving faster? Don't you think I can get antsy sometimes? Sure. Why aren't things moving faster? Why am I not able to get out of here and get going and do my thing? About the time I get up and start to get going, I get zapped again. Think of that. You might just take that home with you today and print it on a card. God has the time. To do what? To make you what He wants you to be, not what He wants me to be. God has the time to make you what you ought to be. And He's not going to make you what somebody else ought to be. You can have mass meetings of all kinds, but in a mass meeting, remember, it's just like the Raphaelepis hedge. God has the time to shape that Raphaelepis so that it looks perfect in terms of its growing habits. And you have your growing habits. Now, where did your growing habits come from? A big subject. I could go the rest of the morning on that. Your life is built on a matrix of all the sum total of elements that have gone to make it up since before you sprung from the cradle, the womb. Before you came out of the womb, you were being shaped. Now, there are examples in the Bible of God's special handling. People like Jeremiah, for example. While you were still in the womb, I knew you. So Jeremiah was a classic example. Paul was called from his mother's womb. How precisely that fits everyone, I don't know. But this much I know, while you were being nurtured within your mother's womb, events were taking place in your life that you had no control over whatsoever. And you came forth from the womb with a certain number of traits and characteristics that are germane to you. Now, some of those traits and characteristics were or have been cultivated by you, shaped in different directions. They're shaped, I don't mean to get too technical here, but they're shaped by what already is. So you spring from the womb, and you already have a certain start, you see, of characteristics and traits. And you receive much genetic information that helps to shape you. Based on that information already in the genes, your response to your life, to events that take place in your life, your response to those events will go along the lines of the data already there, you see. So a lot of times you are making your life up out of data that you had no control over. And you have become a certain kind of person, some of which you can control, and I don't excuse people from responsibility for their lives, but you after all have gone down a certain skewed direction, and that's the way you've gone, based upon the patterns that are on the genetic information that you already possess. Now, do you think for 1 minute that God cannot take that genetic pattern and alter it to become what He wants it to become? The patterns are already there. For example, you have some aggressive individuals. person with aggressive traits. You may call some of your relatives stubborn. Did any of you ever feel that way? You have relatives, you think maybe they're stubborn. Oh, you have it all wrong. There's no wrong. Oh, here's a person that's resolute. The rest of the family thinks they're hard-headed. But they're resolute. And that means when they tackle something, they're going to, by George, go right on through and do it, right? Now, do you not think the Lord can take that habit and make something out of it that will fulfill your particular little niche? We need them around. We need them in the kind of gentle situations where other people are explosive. How often have you heard the expression, well, I don't know how they could do that and be a Christian? Or you could say, I would never let him get away with that if it were my charge. We have these traits, and we need some gentle folk around to help balance things out. And this assembly here, people, you may think to yourself, gee, I wish we had more people in here. I'm not sure I think that. I have to say, I've got enough to take care of now. Remember, there's a balance here. There's a balance. You have people that are on one side and people on another in terms of interaction, interrelationship with others. See that? And you're a certain kind of person. You're in the rough. Out on the landscape circuit, you select a tree for its potential. I used to go down to nurseries, especially along the water, the coast, and you find an old Torlos, a juniper, or a pine tree sitting back in the weeds in a bucket. And you go back there and you dig among the weeds and you find it. You pull it out. And you offer them, I'm going to give you figures that were true 20 years ago or 30. And you offer them $15 for it, right? So they're glad to get rid of it and they give it to you for $15. You buy an inexpensive container, you take it out to the truck, you prune it up, and you take it down the street and sell it for $125. I have done that. Because I know what the growing habit of that plant ought to be and what they have left it. And all I want to do is just shape it to be what it's supposed to be, see? Now, you've got a life that God knows. He's going to shape you into what He wants you to be. And your job is to sit there and grow. I mean, He is going to be shaping you, but what if I fix that thing up? Let's say I have to put a little stake beside it for a while, and I put the stake in, and every time I turn around, the stake is broken because the plant doesn't like that shape. So every time the Lord turns around, you're trying to break His stake. Your life is going just fine for Him. It may not be going fine for somebody else. Now, your life isn't finished yet. And people look at you. And they say, what's the matter with you? How come you don't get off your duff and get going here? Look at untold millions still untold. Get going for God. At least take your money and give it to Him, or give it to us. We'll give it to Him. You let people tell you what you ought to be, and they don't know what they're talking about. It doesn't take long for Christians to wreck you. Put another sign out. It doesn't take long for Christians to wreck me. God is the vine dresser, not your neighbor, not your minister. He can pour a little soil amendment on you, but he can't shape you. God is your husbandman. But what if it doesn't turn out right? Well, whose fault is that? You didn't make yourself. What does God want to do with you? You probably don't know. We had some thoughts recently about how nice it will be to get to heaven. Everything is lovely up there and beautiful and so on and so on. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm not ready for R&R here. I don't want to go and sit among the flowers. I've got a job to do down here. The Lord and I have gotten along well on the battlefield. Now, can you imagine? Just stop and think. The point at which I would enter paradise, this would be over. The job down here would be over for me. The point I'm making to you is this. The Lord knows what He's going to do with this hulk. I don't know what He's going to do with it. I don't know how much He's through with it. I don't know any of those things. All I know is we're getting along fine. I have His Spirit with me all the time. Every moment. But for me to pray and say, oh Lord, You've got to heal me now so that I can go out and do all of these things. And what am I going to do with that? What is my business? My business is to be me. Be David. Well, people say, well, I'm not so sure that's so red hot to be David. Well, that may be true, but it's what it is. It's what it is. So relax and be at peace and be who you are. If He didn't like you, He shouldn't have made you. Right? Sure, if like some little kid that gets a doll for Christmas, we'll say, nice, bright, shiny new doll, and the little kid is going to fix it up. So they go get mother's mascara, and they smear it on the face and put some lipstick on, and they try to wash the hair, and it comes out blue, and, you know, all the things. So here's a little doll, and the kid looks at the doll, sticks your tongue out at it, and says, you're a terrible-looking doll. So what does the doll say? Well, you made me what I am. You made me what I am, dear. I hope you're satisfied. Did you ever hear that song? Anybody here old enough to remember that song? Well, I probably better get off of this soapbox here. I can only get this across that you can relax and be at peace and be who you are and trust the vine dresser to make you what He wants you to be. He will prune you out. Incidentally, a major word in that 15th of John is pruning. You are clean to the word that is spoken unto you. The word, and He says, every branch in me that bears fruit, He purges it. Purge is not a good word. He prunes it. Prunes it. That it may bring forth not more fruit, but greater fruit. I'm not going to get started on that again, but greater fruit. You don't prune a tree to give you more fruit. You prune it to give you better fruit. Right? So He's working you over. You don't like it. He's pruning you, and He's cutting and shaping and whatnot, and you're in there squealing and squawking like a little kid with his first haircut. And the Lord is saying, now just simmer down, simmer down. You'll be all right. Don't get excited. And you get your lollipop and go home. So keep that in mind. You're all fine. The Lord's doing with you what He wants to do. And I see the sprigs of green everywhere, all over. This place is alive with plants. What a great thing it is. So remember, A, you're on the internet. You're in communication with Christ across the universe. And B, He's shaping your life the way He wants it to be, no matter what it looks like to you at the moment. Those trees out there, don't look at what they look at like now, but I can tell you they're going to be pretty nice when they get their foliage back. Please walk out of these doors at peace, will you? God has the time to make you what He wants you to be. And only He can make you what He wants you to be. In spite of the follies of your life, which are inevitable. If you think you're acting foolishly sometimes, throw my vote in with you, because you probably are. On the other hand, He's the one that has to keep you in what He wants you to be, because you're going to be inevitably what you are. You have to understand that, given your genetic pattern, the roadmap by which your life develops, you're going to be what you are. Barring, of course, the rendezvous of sin, you're going to be what you are. If you make mistakes, you'll pay for it. You'll learn, hopefully. But be at peace. And when you talk to Christ, think about yourself. If you want to do it in an allegorical fashion, you're sitting around the campfire, you and Christ and your buddies around you, and you're praying, talking to Him about each other. Lord, here's Sam, he needs something, and here's Joe, and he needs something, etc., etc. And don't think in terms of reeling off your shopping list. Think of you and Christ in instant connection. Instant connection across the universe. And be at peace.